You know, there is a very specific feeling when you realize your parents suddenly need help at home.
Oh, absolutely. It is completely
It
overwhelming.
really is. It is exactly like being dropped into a foreign country in the middle of the night. You do not speak the language, you do not have a map, and every single street sign is just a baffling acronym you have never seen before.
That is the perfect way to describe it.
Yeah.
And usually, you are standing there in the dark because of a highly stressful trigger.
Right.
I mean, maybe it was a late night internet search after your parent had a scary fall,
Yeah.
or maybe a hospital discharge planner handed you a massive stack of papers and just muttered something about in-home supportive services on their way out the door.
Yeah, or maybe it was just a quiet realization over Sunday dinner that your parent is really, really struggling to keep up with their daily routine.
Exactly.
And if you are listening right now, you are likely in the middle of that exact scenario. So, as editors at California Care Compass, we are having this conversation today to basically be your personal translator.
We want to speak directly to you, the California family, who is trying to navigate this system for the very first time. And do not worry, we are not going to bore you with a dry policy manual.
No, definitely not. We are keeping this warm, we are keeping it calm, and we are giving you the direct, actionable map you actually need.
So let us start by defining this massive hidden system you have just stumbled into. It is called In-Home Supportive Services, or IHSS.
Right, IHSS.
And what is truly fascinating here is that this is the largest home care program in the entire country.
Wow.
Yeah, it is a California program that literally pays for someone to come to your parents' home, or to your home if they live with you, to help them with the fundamental tasks of daily life. We are talking about bathing, cooking, cleaning, getting to the bathroom safely, and getting to doctor appointments.
Okay, I have to stop right there because this brings up something that frustrates us endlessly on the editorial side.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
Right. I mean, this program serves well over 600,000 Californians. It is a massive, life-changing lifeline. Yet there are zero billboards for it. You do not see television commercials. There is no flashy marketing budget.
Not at all.
Families usually only find out about this through a frantic whisper network. A neighbor happens to mention it, or, a friend at church brings it up. Why on earth is a public program this incredibly vital kept so quiet?
It is baffling, is it not? But it really comes down to the bizarre way the program is structured administratively.
How so?
Well, the overarching rules for the program are set at the state level by the California Department of Social Services. But the day-to-day operations, things like actually answering the phones, conducting the home assessments, approving the hours, and processing the payroll,
Yeah.
those are completely decentralized. They're run by your local county social services agency. Because the daily operation is fractured across dozens of counties, there is no single unified public relations arm pushing this out to the masses.
So it just quietly hums along in the background.
Exactly. It just hums along until a family like yours slams into a wall and stumbles into the system during a crisis.
And when you do stumble into it, the funding map looks like a giant plate of spaghetti.
That is a good way to put it.
The money keeping this program afloat comes from three completely different places. The federal government, the state of California, and the individual counties all chip in. Which actually brings up something I really want to push back on right away.
Please do.
We hear from families all the time who feel this immense guilt or profound pride when they apply. They feel like they are asking the government for a welfare handout or some special favor.
Right, they feel bad about it.
Exactly. But applying for this program is not a handout. It is actually giving the state a massive bulk discount on elder care.
That is such a critical perspective shift. And if we connect this to the bigger policy picture, that bulk discount is the exact logic behind why the entire program even exists. Policymakers at the California Department of Aging and the California Department of Social Services have both argued for decades that paying for a caregiver in the home is dramatically cheaper than paying for a bed in a skilled nursing facility.
It's just simple math. Institutional care is wildly expensive.
So they actively want you to use this home care program. They are begging you to use it.
Wait, really? The state wants you to enroll.
Absolutely. In fact, the federal government agrees with this math too. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services actually grants California special permission, which they call Medicaid waivers, to spend federal Medicaid dollars on home care for this exact reason.
So it is an investment for them.
Yes. The state is making a very calculated bet. They know that if they pay for a few hours of help at home right now, they likely will not have to pay for a much more expensive institutional stay later down the line. They want you in this program.
That makes so much sense when you put it like that. But wanting you in the program and actually letting you in are two very different things.
Very true.
You have to qualify. I like to think of this process like building a house. You absolutely cannot build the house until you have poured the concrete foundation first. In this case, that concrete foundation is medical.
Precisely. In Home Supportive Services is a public benefit tied directly to Medi-Cal, which is California's version of the federal Medicaid program. Medi-Cal is run by the California Department of Healthcare Services.
Right.
Your parent must be eligible for Medi-Cal to even open the door to state-funded home care. And we really need to highlight a revolutionary policy update here.
Yes, the huge change from January.
Exactly. For years, families were locked out because of strict asset limits. Older adults were forced to spend down their life savings just to qualify for help with bathing and meals.
It was awful.
But on January 1st, 2024, the California Department of Healthcare Services completely eliminated the asset limit for people age 65 and older, as well as for people with disabilities.
That change is absolutely huge. I still talk to families who do not realize this happened. They think that because their dad has a modest savings account or a small retirement fund, he is automatically disqualified.
But that is just not true anymore.
Yeah.
Now it is based on income, not assets.
But wait, what about a parent who already has Medicare? I mean, most people over 65 have Medicare. How does that pathway work? Does having Medicare prevent you from getting Medi-Cal and unlocking the home care?
Not at all.
Yeah.
That is a very common point of confusion. We call this dual eligibility.
Okay.
Medicare covers the doctor visits, the hospital stays, and the medications.
Mm.
But Medicare does not pay for long-term care at home. If your parent has Medicare, but their monthly income is low to moderate, they can apply for Medi-Cal to work right alongside their Medicare.
Oh, I see.
Once that Medi-Cal foundation is poured, the door to the home care program opens wide.
Okay, so the foundation is poured. The next thing the state looks at is simply where your parent sleeps at night. They must live in their own home, an apartment, or even a relative's home. You cannot access this program if your parent is currently living in a facility like a nursing home or an assisted living center.
Right. And once residency is established, the county moves to the most critical part of the puzzle, functional need.
And this is where a lot of families get tripped up.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Age alone does not qualify someone for help. A severe medical diagnosis alone does not automatically qualify someone. It entirely comes down to whether your parent can safely perform the daily tasks of living.
Like what?
Can they physically get up from a chair? Can they safely operate the stove? Can they navigate the shower without falling?
And figuring that out requires what we lovingly call the living room reality check.
Yes.
The assessment. The county social worker will actually come to your parents' home to observe them. They're going to sit on your couch with a clipboard and ask a long, invasive list of questions about their daily life. And this is exactly where we run into a massive roadblock.
The pride factor.
Yes, the pride factor. It is so incredibly common, and it can completely derail the assessment.
I mean, absolutely. Older adults will minimize their struggles out of pure pride or a deep-seated fear of losing their independence. Your mother might sit there and cheerfully tell the social worker she is doing perfectly fine.
Right. She will say she cooks every day.
She will say she cooks every day and cleans the house, even if the reality is she is eating cold cereal for every single meal and avoiding the shower entirely because she is terrified of slipping.
Wow.
She is not trying to maliciously deceive the social worker. She is just desperately trying to hold on to her dignity.
That sounds like an absolute minefield for the family. If I am sitting there listening to my dad tell a social worker that he never forgets to turn off the stove, and I know for a fact he almost burned the kitchen down last week, I am going to panic.
Of course.
But if I aggressively contradict my dad in front of a government stranger, he is going to be furious and humiliated. How do you step in and provide an honest picture without stripping them of their dignity or starting a massive family argument right there in the living room?
It requires immense tact and preparation. First of all, you have to sit in on this assessment. Do not let your parent do it alone.
Good advice.
But you want to avoid contradicting them directly with a harsh rejection of their reality. Do not say, "Dad, that is a lie. You cannot do that."
Yeah.
Instead, use specific recent anecdotes to jog their memory collaboratively.
Like how?
You can gently interject with something like, "Mom, do you remember last Tuesday when we had so much trouble getting out of the bathtub?" Or, "Dad, what about that time last week when the stove got left on and we had to open all the windows?"
Oh, so you were framing it as a shared memory rather than an accusation.
Exactly. The social workers are trained to look past the minimizing, but they absolutely need those honest, concrete details from you to authorize the right amount of help.
Okay, so let us say you survive the reality check. The assessment is done, the hours are officially approved. Here's where the program takes a turn that surprises almost every family we talk to.
Yes, the caregiver part.
The caregiver who provides this newly approved help does not have to be a random stranger from a county registry. The caregiver can be an adult child, it can be a spouse, it can be a trusted friend. Mm. You, listening to this right now, can be the paid caregiver.
Yes. The California Department of Social Services officially calls this consumer directed care. It shifts the power dynamic.
Right.
Technically, the parent receiving the care is considered the employer. They have the power to hire, to direct the daily work, and yes, to fire the provider. The state simply steps in to handle the payroll mechanics and cut the checks.
Wait, I have to laugh at the awkwardness of this. Being your own mother's employee is an incredible dynamic. Does my parent technically have the legal power to fire me for making their lunch?
On paper, absolutely. They are the boss. They sign your timesheets.
That is hilarious.
But jokes aside, there is brilliant policy logic behind consumer-directed care. The data consistently shows that family caregivers tend to provide much better, more consistent, and more compassionate care.
That makes total sense.
Think about it. Older adults are far more comfortable accepting help with highly intimate tasks, like bathing or using the bathroom, from a daughter or a spouse, than from a complete stranger who just walked in the door.
But obviously, the state does not just start writing checks, no questions asked. There is red tape to become that provider. You cannot just declare yourself the caregiver and wait for the money.
Correct. There is a formal provider enrollment process. You have to attend an orientation, usually in person or online, and you have to go through formal fingerprinting and a background check.
And sometimes families get highly offended by this. They assume the government is demanding to fingerprint them just to take care of their own parents because they do not trust them.
Right, but the background check is actually a strict, non-negotiable requirement from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Mm. Because the program is using federal funds, they have to ensure they are preventing elder abuse and financial crimes across the board.
So it is standard procedure.
Yes. It is not designed to penalize or suspect ordinary family caregivers. It is just a broad safety net.
That makes sense when you look at it from a distance.
Yeah.
So let us talk about the timeline, because families need to know what they're actually walking into. You make that initial intake call to your county, and that gets the official clock ticking.
Right.
But then you are waiting. The social worker has to schedule the home visit. Then you wait for them to process their notes. Then you wait to receive a formal notice of action in the mail detailing the approved hours. Then the provider has to go through the enrollment and background check. Start to finish, how long are we talking?
You need to set your expectations for a marathon, not a sprint. Do not expect help to arrive next week.
Really?
Yeah. The entire process, from that first intake call to actually submitting your first timesheet, generally takes anywhere from 2 to 4 months. It is a slow, bureaucratic wheel.
Wow. Okay. And what happens if you endure that entire marathon, you finally get that notice of action in the mail after waiting months, and the approved hours are just shockingly low?
That does happen.
I like to think of this home care program as an incredibly sturdy, well-built bridge. It is vastly better than swimming, but unfortunately, it sometimes only goes 3/4 of the way across the river. It does not solve everything, and sometimes the county drastically underestimates what you actually need.
If the hours are too low, you have the absolute right to appeal. You are not stuck with their first offer. This is done via a formal state hearing process managed by the California Department of Social Services.
Can families actually win those?
And I want to be clear here. Families win these appeals all the time. The secret to winning is bringing new, concrete documentation that the original social worker did not have during the home visit.
Like medical records.
Yes. You need a highly detailed letter from a doctor outlining specific physical limitations, or a daily log you have kept over 2 weeks, tracking exactly how many minutes it takes to complete basic tasks.
We also need to highlight a very specific, often misunderstood category of hours called protective supervision.
Yes, this is crucial. Protective supervision is specifically designed for individuals with severe cognitive impairments, like advanced Alzheimer's or dementia.
Right.
These are folks who might physically be able to walk perfectly fine, but they need someone present simply to keep them safe from wandering out the front door or turning on the gas stove and forgetting about it. It is one of the most under-requested and improperly denied categories in the entire system.
Why does it get denied so often?
Because assessors sometimes miss the subtle signs of cognitive decline if they are just focused on observing physical mobility. They see someone who can walk and feed themselves, and they assume they do not need constant supervision.
That is so frustrating.
It really is. If your parent has dementia, we highly recommend reading the specific guidance documents provided by the California Department of Aging regarding protective supervision before you ever file an appeal. You need to know exactly what legal criteria the administrative judge needs to see to approve those hours.
And since we promised an honest, direct conversation, that means we also have to set clear expectations about what this bridge does not cover. It is a vital program, but it is not comprehensive. First, it does not cover medical nursing care.
Correct.
You cannot use these state-funded hours to pay someone to administer complex injections, manage IVs, or do intensive wound care.
It is also not a ride service. Now, a caregiver can drive a parent to a scheduled doctor's appointment as part of their authorized hours, but the program does not function as an on-demand taxi for casual errands or visiting friends.
Right, and perhaps, most importantly, we have to talk about isolation. This program does not provide daytime socialization. The caregiver is authorized to be there to complete specific physical tasks.
Exactly. Once the meal is cooked and the laundry is done, those authorized hours are over. If your parent is deeply lonely and sitting in an empty, quiet house all day, this program alone will not fix that emotional isolation.
So, what does this all mean for your family? It brings us to our editorial take. Here at California Care Compass, we firmly believe that families should not have to learn about this massive, life-changing program from scratch at midnight during a crisis.
The Whisper Network is broken, and it leaves too many families struggling alone.
But if you have listened this far, we want to assure you that you are now far ahead of the curve. You are no longer in the dark. You have the map.
And to keep you moving forward with confidence, we have a direct step-by-step action plan for you to tackle this week.
Yes, let us get into it.
First, confirm your parents' medical status. That is the foundation. If they do not have it, start the application process immediately. Second, find the local number and call your county's in-home supportive services intake line.
Just to get the clock ticking.
Exactly. Making that initial call officially starts the clock. You do not need to have everything perfectly organized before you make the call.
Mm-hmm.
Just get the bureaucratic process started.
Third, start gathering your documents right now. Collect the medical records, a current list of medications, and most importantly, start keeping a notebook of your daily struggle notes. Write down every time they stumble, every time they skip a meal, every time they struggle to get out of a chair.
That is so important for the assessment.
It really is. Fourth, sit down and have a gentle, honest discussion with your parent about caregiver expectations. If you are going to step up and be the paid provider, talk about what that dynamic looks like.
And fifth, take some time to read the detailed eligibility guide on our site so you understand the exact physical criteria before the social worker ever knocks on your door.
Awesome advice.
And remember that bridge analogy we used earlier, the bridge that only goes 3/4 of the way across the river because it does not cover daytime socialization or nursing care.
Yes, the missing piece.
We want to promise you that our next deep dive will cover that missing piece of the puzzle. There is another incredible state program called Community-Based Adult Services. It provides exactly what we just said is missing: daytime care, medical monitoring, and robust socialization.
That sounds amazing.
It picks up exactly where the home care program leaves off, and we will guide you through that specific map next time.
Before we go, we want to leave you with a final thought to ponder. We talked earlier about how the state actively wants you to use this program because paying for a family caregiver is dramatically cheaper than paying for a nursing facility.
Right. We talked about how family members provide the most consistent, effective, and compassionate care.
And this raises a profound question. If keeping people at home is clearly the most cost-effective policy for the state, and family members are clearly the best caregivers, why do we still design our entire medical system around the default assumption that older adults will inevitably end up in facilities?
It is a great question. Why is home care treated as a hidden secret rather than the default standard?
Exactly. When you are sitting at that kitchen table this week, filling out this massive stack of paperwork, do not look at your caregiving as a private, isolating burden. You are not just doing a favor for your parent.
No, you're doing so much more. Your effort, your time, and your home are actually the fundamental foundation of the state's healthcare system.
They built this entire system relying on your unpaid or underpaid labor. Now it is time to make the system work for you. You are no longer in a foreign country without a guide. You have the translator, you have the map. Take a deep breath, make the intake call, and we will catch you next time.